Southern FM News.
At 4 minutes past two, a very good afternoon and welcome to the Community Block. I'm Peter Tolich, filling in for Colin Tyrus, who is winging his way back from London in the UK. In the first part of this hour, I'm with the Better Health Network, which is a non-for-profit organisation that provides primary and allied health care services to communities around and across southeast Melbourne. And to tell me more about it, would you please welcome Laura Hanson, who's a physiotherapist and the program lead for the Better Health Network, and also the Deputy Chair of the APA Leadership and Management National Group. That's a great introduction. A very good afternoon, Laura. How are you?
Hi, Peter. I'm well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, I've got to turn.
Sorry.
That was me, not jumping the gun. Welcome to the program. First time on radio, I believe.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Not scary at all.
Yes. Okay.
It is. Take me through what the Deputy Chair of the Leadership and Management National Group does. It's a fancy title, but it's obviously very important.
It is a fancy title, yes. It's probably more fancy than it actually involves. The APA is the Australian Physiotherapy Association, and they have a number of special interest groups. So, you know, there might be a paediatric special interest group, musculoskeletal interest group, business interest group, and the one that I'm involved in is the Leadership and Management interest group. So for a lot of clinicians, we come through, we're trained clinically, and then as you get your clinical experience, you often want to sort of rise up and progress in your career and develop into leadership roles, and often you end up managing a team. And at times there can be very little support transitioning from a clinician into more of that managerial leadership role. So that's basically what our special interest group does, is it supports our members learning those leadership skills. We provide resources as well. So PD, which is professional development, to our members, so that we all sort of learn from each other, really.
How long have you been in the chair?
Oh, 3 or 4 years now. Yes, it's gone quickly.
And the accent?
The accent is from the UK, although I'm told that it's pretty hybrid now. I think it's a bit of a blend, but yes, there is still a little bit of an English twang in there somewhere.
And you did this in the UK before you came down under?
I trained as a physiotherapist in the UK. Yes, so I've been working. I qualified in 2001, so I've been working for a very long time now.
That's not a long time.
it feels like a long time. And yes, I moved to Australia and continued working as a physiotherapist in Australia. And I think that's one of the beauties of physiotherapy, is it is so versatile and transferable. So yes, my qualifications were recognised from the UK to Australia, and so I can keep doing what I love.
Why the jump to Australia?
That was because I met a certain Australian gentleman, and I was sort of at a bit of a crossroads in my career, and it seemed like a good option at the time. So that's what led me here, and I've stayed ever since.
And the job is universal, as you said.
And the job is universal, yes.
Right across all 195 countries, or is it something that is just restricted to the empire?
It depends. There are different restrictions depending on where you've come from. So yes, there are certain sort of processes you can go through to get your qualification recognised in Australia. So yes, other countries can have their qualifications recognised and they can work here as well.
That's amazing. The before we get on to what this month is all about, I did some myotherapy a little while ago. What's the difference between all the therapies? Like your physio, and there's exercise physio.
Yes.
Exercise therapy.
Physiology, yes.
Can you box that in for me to clarify it?
There's a few, yes, and there's a lot of confusion, I think, sometimes around what the differences are. So a myotherapist would work specifically with muscles, so myo being muscles, and they can do muscle techniques, treatment techniques. So they also do needling as well. Mm-hmm. So they would do similar treatment techniques to what a physiotherapist would do. In physiotherapy, we assess and we diagnose. So we would assess somebody's particular symptoms presentation, and then we give a diagnosis based on that, and then we treat that diagnosis. So we have a range of techniques that we can do. Exercise features heavily in that. There's a lot of research to show the benefits of exercise, but we can do manual therapy as well. So that might be working on the joints, it might be working on the muscles. We can do needling too, and there is overlap between what a chiropractor would do versus what an osteopath would do versus what a physiotherapist would do as well. Mm-hmm. So we all sort of work. There is some commonalities across all of those professions.
Do you do the neck cracking?
We don't do too much of the neck cracking. That does tend to sit more in the chiropractic realm. But yes, certainly some physiotherapists do the neck cracking when it's applicable, when it's appropriate.
It is scary. I had that done a couple of times. I didn't go back. It petrified me.
I'm not a fan of having it done myself.
Okay. So it's obviously it's not in your realm of abilities.
Not for me, no.
Cool. All right. Tell me, this month is April No Falls Month. We're almost at the end of April. In fact, today is the 100th birthday of Queen Elizabeth.
There you go.
From the
UK. Something new that I should have known already, but I learned today. Thank you.
It's also my friend's birthday in Perth, but that's another story. Tell me about what the month is all about, even though we're at the end of it. I presume it doesn't stop on April the 30th.
No, of course. So it's all around falls prevention and providing support to people, just knowing how to access services that might help them if they are having falls or if they're concerned about falls, because sometimes it's the fear of falling also that can be a problem. So it's just raising awareness around, you know, what is available to people if they need to reach out and seek support.
So this is falling, not from partying, this is just normal people falling. So when your people say, I fell up the stairs because I had too many grape juices and so on and some too much yeast, this is real ridgy-didge falling.
Correct, yes. So,
and this comes about from what? It's an amazing statistic of how many people over 65 fall.
Yes, yes.
And I'm in that bracket, so it scares me. I must be in the 70% because I don't think I've fallen yet.
Yes. Falls can also include near misses, so it can be slips, trips and falls. So it can be any time you need to support yourself on a lower surface. So it might not necessarily be falling to the floor. So often I'll have clients who will say, no, I've never had a fall. But actually, when you ask, they've tripped and they've managed to catch themselves on the furniture or something like that. That still counts as a fall. So we include near misses as well in that. And yes, nothing to do with anything that's been consumed, but more so that can be multifactorial. So it might be, weakness. It might be issues with balance. There can be vestibular problems, vestibular being your eye and inner ear balance.
Okay.
So, you know, that sort of swimmy effect after you've been on a roller coaster or something like that. It's that sort of balance system. There may be neurological problems. There can be lots of causes of falls.
So how do you determine that? That's like if you said someone says they don't realise they've had a near miss, but they've had a near miss. So how do you police that? Who polices that?
Often the GP will be the first person, but yeah, we would do a full health screening. So if somebody comes into us for physiotherapy assessment, we would include things like, you know, what's their environment like as well? What's their physical status like? What's their neurological status like? We'd also include medical issues. You know, we'd contact their GP. There might be polypharmacy, which is when people are on a number of different medicines, and that can also contribute to falls as well. So we really take a very holistic approach, not only allied health, so being occupational therapy, physiotherapy and podiatry, but also working with the medical team as well. So GPs, geriatricians, nursing staff. You've got to take a whole person view when you're assessing somebody for falls.
What's a geriatrician?
It's a specialised doctor who works with elderly people.
Okay. And what's elderly? What deems to be? Is it over 65? Is it over 70?
It's over 65.
Okay. And beyond 65, it obviously increases.
Yes.
The susceptibility to falling.
Yes.
So 65, you're at the good end?
65 is when you need to start thinking, or even earlier sometimes, is when you need to start thinking about preventative measures and keeping yourself active and just really keeping up as much independence as possible, doing as much as you can.
Mm. What's the figure? Is it 1 in 10, 2 in 10 that fall?
For falls, I believe it's around 90%. So, 30. I'm thinking of the wrong figure.
Yep.
Around 30% of adults over 65 experience at least one fall a year.
Wow. What about people under 65?
I'm not sure on the figures on that, sorry.
Do people obviously under 65 must
people
fall?
Yes, absolutely, yes. And it can depend on, you know, somebody might have a neurological condition and they're younger than 65 and that can also lead them to have falls.
Wow. Well, I'm glad I'm not in that. Although saying that, as you said, sometimes you don't know whether you have fallen or haven't fallen. As it can be a stumble and you think, oh, well, you know, I turned my ankle or whatever.
Absolutely. I hear that a lot. People will say, oh, but there was a reason I tripped over the cat and the cat led me to fall. So there can be legitimate reasons. It might also be a sign that somebody's just stopping doing what they used to previously enjoy because they're worried that they might fall. For instance, gardening's a good example. People get worried that they might be pulling something out of the ground and they're worried they're going to stumble back.
Yep.
Or, you know, carrying the pots around the garden, they're worried that they're going to trip over a loose stone. So it might even be as innocuous as I've just stopped doing what I used to enjoy because I'm worried about falling. So it could be a lack of confidence. That's sort of the precursor to then your window of movement and ability just narrows because you stopped doing what you were previously doing. And then it may lead into I tripped over the rug, I stood up and I lost my balance to sort of, you know, what we then people would normally understand as a full fall.
Is there anything we can do to prevent ourselves from falling? Is it, you know, like move space out, clear things out?
Absolutely, yes. There's plenty that can be done and often very simple things that don't cost any money as well. So loose rugs at home, just making sure that there's no loose rugs, there's no trip hazards around the house, making sure footwear is well-fitting and supportive, making sure that the lighting is adequate as well, particularly at nighttime. People often will, you know, need to get up to use the bathroom in the middle of the night and the lighting's not adequate. And people will trip and fall because they just can't see well enough. So also checking vision as well, making sure that people are having regular eye checks to make sure that their vision is good or that they are wearing glasses if they need to wear glasses. So there's lots of easy things that can be done. And then obviously seeking help if you do have any concerns, such as a physiotherapist who would be able to screen you for falls and look at what's your balance like. We would assess their balance. We would assess their muscle function, their joint range, all of those sorts of things to get a physical sense of that person's ability as well as the environmental state.
How do you assess balance? Standing on one leg
there's different tools that we use. There's different outcome measures that we can use. But yes, standing on one leg is one of them. It might even be just standing with your feet together. So when you have a wider base of support, so if your feet are apart, you're better balanced. If you're standing with your feet together and your base of support is narrow, then it's much harder to balance. Progressing to like a tandem stance. So if you're standing on one foot in front of the other, as if you're on a tightrope, harder still, and then standing on one leg would be harder still. So yes, there's different tools that we can use to check people's balance.
Is this something that can be alleviated by people doing sport as youngsters and prepare themselves for old age?
Yes, definitely preventative measures help, but it's also continuing it on. So a lot of the time people will say, oh yes, I used to be active and I used to do sport and then I stopped. So it's just continuing on with things that you enjoy doing, yes.
What about the falling, going down the stairs and missing the last step?
Yes.
Is that something that is just an accident or is that fall into the realm of falling down and being part of that 30%?
Yes, definitely falling into that 30%. So it might be lighting as well, just checking that the lighting's there. It might be that you've got distracted and you're not thinking, or it might be that you're carrying the washing basket down the stairs and you just couldn't see and you miscounted. So there can be different reasons why that happens. Yeah.
I've fallen into that one totally.
Yeah.
I'm talking to Laura Hansen from the Better Health Network. We're going to take a song break and also some very important sponsor messages, and then we'll come back and talk about all things falling in the month of April.
Remember when we were new? Life was simple for me and you. And I know, oh, it's true. Falling, falling for you. Remember how the days flew by, how you held me right. And I know in my heart, falling, I'm falling for you. How magical, how sublime to hear your voice down the telephone line. I'm counting my blessings 'cause I can. Joy and the tears, and I say once again, I'm falling, still falling for you.
When it comes to reducing pain and rebuilding strength, Kiza leaves nothing to chance. Our university-qualified health professionals don't just treat problem areas. They design personalized training programs using Swiss-engineered machines unique to Kiza. These machines safely isolate the affected area, test your strength, and help rebuild your muscles for a stronger, more active, and healthier life. Kiza. Building strength with precision across Melbourne, Geelong and Bendigo.
Southern FM sponsor.
Hyatt and Hampton Community Centres offer a welcoming place for everyone. We provide a range of social and recreational activities for all ages and abilities. Visit us at Hyatt for a cuppa and cake, plus meet friendly locals at Chatty Cafe every Tuesday. Or head to Hampton on a Wednesday for Nourish, a full day of free activities with coffee and cake, lunch and a wildcard Wednesday activity. Visit baysidecommunitycentres.org.au. Southern FM sponsor.
Got something to celebrate? From birthdays and engagements to work parties, date nights or catch-ups, Cyan Bar and Lounge is where Bayside comes together to have fun. With three bars over two levels, a beer garden, rooftop terrace and cocktail lounge, it's the perfect vibe for any group size. Add great food, signature cocktails and live entertainment, and you've got yourself the ultimate night out. So drop in for dinner or book your next function now at cyanbar.com.au and see what the buzz is all about.
Station sponsor.
23 minutes past 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Peter Tolich and it is the Community Block Half Hour. And I'm with Laura Hansen, who is from the Better Health Network and the more specifically the Parkdale branch, which is one of many branches in the southeastern suburbs.
Yes, we spread all the way from South Melbourne down to Chelsea. And I myself, I'm based between Parkdale and Chelsea. Yep.
Good area of southeast Melbourne.
It's very nice being able to go for a walk along the beach at lunchtime, I have to say.
And not fall. And we are talking about the falls month. We're talking about all things and preventing falls. Can you tell me more about prevention of falls?
Yes, I think just to emphasise that a holistic approach is really important. So often our clients will see podiatrists, they'll see the occupational therapist, and they'll see the physiotherapist as well. And obviously they have links with their GP as well. So we work together as what's called an MDT, so a multidisciplinary team. Mm-hmm. So looking after somebody's feet is highly important, making sure that they've got supportive shoes. The occupational therapist would work more with somebody's own environment, so they'll often go out to do a home visit, and they can assess, you know, access to the house. They can assess access within the house as well. So if somebody needs rails fitting, if they need support to get on and off the toilet, they might need a raised toilet seat. They might need other environmental changes to their home. And then the physiotherapy role is really looking at the person's physical abilities. So we would assess their strength. We would assess their function as well. Can they get on and off the chair? Can they do the transfers that they need to do? You know, what's their walking like, what's their strength like, and, you know, what's their balance like as well. So you're really taking that holistic approach when looking at somebody when you're thinking about falls.
Do, say, in my situation, if I'm not referred to by my GP, could I walk into a branch and start asking questions?
Yeah, absolutely. You're welcome to come in and start asking questions. For our Parkdale physiotherapy team, we do require a GP referral.
Okay.
And that's purely because we need to make sure that somebody's been sort of properly reviewed medically. There might be polypharmacy issues, so there might be, they need their medications reviewed if somebody's on a number of medications. It's also really good just to keep that communication between the GP and our service as well, so that we all know what is, you know, relevant to that person that's come in to see us. We've got, the GPs sent us information, we send the GP information, and that really helps support the person's, whatever intervention they need.
From, and this is probably a tough question, I don't know whether there is an answer for it, the C word. So people over 65, some people may be self-funded, some people may be on pensions, some people may not have any income source. Is it costly?
It depends on somebody's funding. So there is different funding available. So there's the Commonwealth Home Support funding. We also see people who are on support at home now. And there's also community health funding. If we see people under 65, then they may be on community health funding, or they may be on what's called HAC. So it depends on somebody's income level. We would assess whether their services are supported by that funding level, or whether it's, you know, there's co-payments as well. So often it can be very easily accessible from a cost point of view. Yes.
Fantastic.
So there shouldn't be a barrier.
So that's obviously, that was a question.
Yeah, that's not a barrier. Not a barrier. No.
What about someone that's in denial?
It may be that their family actually pick up issues first.
Okay.
Before that person themselves recognises or acknowledges that there might be issues. And it can be a sensitive topic to broach if you notice a family member or loved one starting to have, you know, particular challenges around the home or with their ability and what they used to be able to do, then may not be doing it as well as they used to. So it can be a sensitive topic. So I think coming at it from a positive frame of saying, hey, you know, I've heard that, you know, some strength and balance training can be really helpful. I noticed that you're having difficulty here. How about we look into that together? And, you know, just trying to support that person. Why don't we go for a walk together? Shall we go out and, you know, whatever it is, go to the beach, go to play golf, you know, whatever it is, but just encouraging that person to be active, or if they do recognize that there's some concerns, giving them support to access services.
That's that'd be a very tricky one, wouldn't it? Because as a family member, do you go to the family member's GP, or what's the first line of attack in that situation? Other than talking to the person directly, as you said, walk along the beach and have a chat.
I think once you've spoken with that person, then going to that person's GP. then that would be the first step, yes.
What about falls training?
Falls training, there's very strong evidence that strength and balance training is really helpful in preventing falls. So yes, the sort of training that we do in our programs, we include vestibular exercises, as I mentioned before, that's the eye exercises and head turns and so on. We also have strength training, so specifically targeting leg muscles, so the muscles in the thighs, the muscles in the calves, the muscles around the back of the hips as well. Mm-hmm. So we do progressive exercises for those. We also do a number of obstacles and circuits. So we have things that you need to step over. We have wobbly surfaces. We can progress the exercises or we can regress the exercises. So there's a lot of individualization available within those programs. So no matter what level somebody's at, there's an option for them.
How much do we heed? And I've got into a habit lately of scrolling through Instagram feeds, reels and Facebook reels, and there's a lot about chair yoga and a whole heap of people advising on what you should do. Are they credible and should we take notice of those or should we just go push that aside and go to people like the Better Health Network and your GPs?
I think first and foremost, go to the GP and or to a physiotherapy OT service, something like that, because it can be difficult. There is a lot of stuff online and some of it is great and some of it is not. And so I think when you've got so much choice there in front of you and you're not sure where to even start, if you go to a qualified professional first, you know, you're going to get the right information, you're going to get the correct exercises. And then from there, once you're feeling confident in the baseline and what you know you need to do, then you can start to source information from other places. But I think sometimes there can be a little bit too much variety in what's available online.
Dr. Google's not the answer.
Dr. Google's not always the answer. Wow.
Laura Hansen, on wrapping up, is there anything that you'd like to add to our conversation?
Yes, obviously, if anyone's got any concerns about themselves or a loved one with regards to falls or fear of falling or near misses, please reach out. You can contact us at Better Health Network through our website, or you can reach out to us directly on our phone number, which is 132246, and we'd love to be able to help.
Fantastic. You've helped me a lot. I'm going to strengthen myself because I need some strengthening. I think some planking is required
yes.
to get my core up and running.
Yep.
And then I'll certainly mention it to my family members to keep an eye on me in case I keep blaming the dog on falling over.
And golf is a fantastic way to stay active as well. I know you mentioned that.
Yeah, so. I do. I do my 30 kilometres per week trying to chase golf balls around the course there. But you've enlightened me and I hope you've enlightened our listeners as well as to what is needed if you're over 65. And hopefully I'll keep falling into the 70% bracket that haven't fallen. And we bring that number down from 30% to 20%, even 10% of over 65s that don't experience falls
in
their lifetime.
Prevention is key.
Prevention is key, is better than cure.
Thank you.
Laura Hansen from the Better Health Network, thank you very much. Have a great afternoon and hopefully we'll see you next month.
Thank you very much for having me.